The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
CPI is in line and PPI is a little hot, broadening out and rising up. NASDAQ hitting an all-time high. Looking at valuations and continuing to plan for 2025. And our guest today is Steve Sanders, EVP at Interactive Brokers. All this and much more on episode number 899 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hey, just a few more short weeks left in the year, and we have plenty of work to do. No question about that. Hey, it's Andrew Horowitz here, coming to you from the new and improved studios at Horowitz Company in what is now, it looks like, windy Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And I'm sure that we've said it 1,000 times, like during the summer, it's the hottest summer ever. Seems like the wind has been the worst I can ever remember being down here. It's consistent. It's like a tunnel of just wind coming through on a constant basis. And, you know, I'm a boater, so I'm always looking at the wind and when we can go out and when it's going to be too rough. And it's been way too rough to go out for some time now. Before it's too late, we need to discuss a few things because I want to I want to have a discussion with you about end of year and give you what I think would be a really good end of year guide, a general guide for the end of the year. That's what we'll call it. And something that we're going to talk about, because I jotted down a few different areas I want to really focus in on, is probably going to trigger some of you, maybe many of you, into doing something, into thinking about, well, you know, I forgot about that. Good thing that Horowitz guy mentioned that, because otherwise I wouldn't have done it. And I know I don't want to forget anything, and I know that I don't want you to forget anything. So let's just talk about some of the things that we want to do as a year end. And here we are, 2 weeks left. There's enough time to do what you got to do, but not enough time to procrastinate. So let's get this done right away. I think the first thing that we need to really look at, it makes sense, is to start reviewing our investment portfolio, right? We need to check the performance of our investments, rebalance if we need to maintain our target allocation that we put together. You may or may not have something like that. But at least you should look at where you are overweight, underweight. Look at your entirety of what you have and have a frank talk with yourself to see if, you know, am I the best to be managing this portfolio? And I always think about this. I always think about there's a reason why we don't do our own haircuts. Yeah, sure, I could pick up a pair of scissors and I can clip away. I can pick up a pair of clippers and I could just buzz. But I probably can't do a good job on the back of my neck. The reality is, it's not a matter of inability to use the tools. It's a lack of perspective. And that lack of perspective is something we need to think about, because emotions get in the way with a lot of things that we do when we're dealing with personal issues that is so close to us, so close to not our hearts, but our wallets, like finance. And that being the case, really needs to think about if you could put your pride, your ego aside just for a minute and say, you know what? I don't care if somebody sees how I've done over the years. It's time to get somebody else involved here. We also want to take some time to throw out the trash. Those investments that you've been, they're just sitting around collecting dust in your account forever that are just rotten to the core. You know those. It's time to clean up. Clean house. And I guess give yourself the ability to just move on. They're taking up way too much space in that one day, maybe someday, hopefully, brain matter that we have. Get rid of it. Just get rid of it. And if you can't do it, I'm giving you the permission to do so. Make it a concerted effort from now to the end of the year to find those rotten investments that you've been hanging on to for too long. Take the tax loss. Just get rid of them. And I think finally, maybe it's time to decomplicate your portfolio. those investments that you have that are just way too complicated. And they just don't know what they are. You just don't understand them anymore. Maybe they're on the chopping block. Let's make some time to get back and go figure out what needs to be held and what could be repositioned into a better area that is less complicated. Ask yourself a simple question. It's a very simple question. If you had the money that's in that investment in that particular vehicle right now, and it really was in cash at this exact moment, would you buy that investment right now? Would you actually go out with cash and do that again? If the answer is no, well, you know what to do. It's very simple. Fact is that there's no reason to have a complicated position inside of the portfolio. And you know what those are. Those are these really, first of all, illiquid possibly, or to a point illiquid if you could do something about it. But more so the issue of whether or not that is an understandable investment that is simple and easy to deal with. Track, maintain, monitor. And is it really a position that should be within your portfolio? Now, let's get on to another subject outside the reviewing of investment portfolio positions. How about the idea of tax loss harvesting? Now, I know that sounds like a complicated issue, and it's like, what could that be, and how do I do that? Well, you want to look for your underperforming investments, particularly in this year and over the last few years, that maybe have a capital loss, and use them to sell to offset any capital gains and reduce your tax liability. Now, we've done that a lot for our clients this year. We spent a lot of time going through where the opportunities were available. I'm glad to say that we were able to accomplish a lot. I'm sad to say, in a weird way, that we couldn't do a lot. And the reason was that investments over the last few years have been doing so well, there's not a lot of capital losses that are really apparent. It's not easy with the markets hitting new highs. It's not easy when you have your investments that's running all the way up to the top. But there are some in your portfolio you probably can find to do some offsetting. Save you some taxes. Tax efficiency in a portfolio goes hand in hand with returns. If you have good returns and good tax efficiency, excellent. Good returns and bad tax efficiency, not so smart. But also remember, as you go through this process, when you're looking for investment, if you want to stay within, let's say, large cap stocks, and you want to move from one to another for that period of time to get the tax loss that you're going to take, you have 31 days called a wash rule. 31 days it has to move to the other asset before you can move it back into the asset that we were talking about, buying it back, if you will. So you sell asset A, buy asset B, take the tax loss on asset A. Asset B has a reasonable look and feel and maybe somewhat, I don't want to say equivalent, but similar to the other asset. So you can ride with that and stay fully invested. After 30 days, you sell asset B and put it back into asset A. Simple, but yet something that needs to be done. Let's talk about retirement. Got to make sure you maximize your retirement contributions, because if you don't, you're too late, not going to happen. Now, there are some things that you could do. Of course, you could fund your IRA, your SEP IRA, and a few other things until the filing date of your tax return. But things like 401ks, can't do it. Got to make sure that is funded by the end of the year. Now, if you own a business, there are profit sharing plans that you can actually fund after the end of the year for 2024. But if you are an individual with a 401k plan, you have to make sure to fund it fully by the end of the year. Now, what about that flexible spending account, that FSA? Any of you that have that, well, you know, there's something called a use it or lose it rule deadline that's there by the end of the year. Not every plan has this, but most do. It's called like a cafeteria plan sometimes, a flexible spending account. If you have monies available at the end of the year, if your plan says use it or lose it and you're going to lose it, go out and get yourself some prescription sunglasses or get some dental work done, something that's not covered by insurance. They could use the funds from your flexible spending account and you can actually pay for that. Now back to IRAs for a second and retirement plans. What about those RMDs, those required minimum distributions? The rules have changed a bit, but if you're 73 or older, well, first of all, clearly, depending on how old you are, but you may have had to start taking this years ago. Well, if you're turning 73 and a half, or you're getting into that age group, maybe you're 78, you need to take withdrawals from your IRAs. Those are called required minimum distributions. The custodian on your account, maybe even your bank, they'll tell you what that's supposed to be. There's ways very easily to find an RMD calculator. And those RMD calculators will give you how much you needed to take out this year. The penalties, if you don't do this, very severe. So make sure to do that by the end of the year. Then we have philanthropy. We have charitable giving. Donate to charities, whether it is cash or in-kind. In-kind could be a car, could be clothing, could be computers. Plenty of charities out there that are taking those kinds of materials. Some of them will even come to your house and pick them up. But you have until December 31st. It's a good time. We are all doing well. Many of us. Give to charity. Give to the less fortunate. Find ways to share the wealth. And at the same time, give yourself a benefit because you're going to get a deduction for it. Make a plan to check your tax withholding and payments. You want to make sure that you're putting enough into your plan. Now, there's different ways to do this. If you're a W-2 employee, you're probably covered. But if you are a sole practitioner, if you are sub S, if you're getting paid 1099, you need to make sure you have estimated payments. If in fact you're retired and getting income from your accounts, you need to make estimated payments. And you need to do so on time. You don't want to be surprised when you're filing your taxes with what in fact you should have paid versus what you did pay and get all sorts of penalties. Now, next, it's also a good time to do things like evaluating your financial goals, taking a moment to reflect on your progress towards goals like buying a house, maybe even building for an emergency fund, saving for college for your kids, putting away funds for the next generation. Whatever your particular goals are, that's the goals you want to focus on and look at, where am I in that? Is another year past that, God damn it, I didn't do a thing about what I said I wanted to do? It's like the old days, not the new days of losing weight. The new days is stick yourself and stab yourself and you're good to go, right? The old days was, I'll start that diet on Monday. You know what? I'm going to eat like hell in December because I'm going to diet starting January 2nd. One of my favorite things to look at when I'm out in the first couple of weeks of January, are the parking lots at the gymnasiums packed? Right about this time of year, empty. That's how it is. When we're looking at evaluating our financial goals, we also want to set some goals. Now, are these resolutions that we're just going to make willy-nilly and forget about? Well, I hope not. One of the ways that I always stick to my goals is writing them down. Now, whether you want to write them down on a piece of paper with a pen or whether you want to use your notepad inside of your smartphone, I don't care. Whether you want to type them somewhere and have them flash you on a regular basis, that's great. Have a personal meeting with yourself on a regular basis in order to make sure that you are aligned with where your goals should be. And part of that process is setting goals for maybe investing, taxes, something like reviewing estate planning documents, maybe looking to update your will, your trust. How about beneficiary designations on all your different IRAs, life insurance? Make sure it aligns with your current wishes. I can't tell you how many clients we ask, you know, how are your beneficiaries doing? Like, well, I haven't looked in a few years. Some people that they had on there are dead, no longer friends, no longer married. These are things you need to do. Now, of all the things I've mentioned here, some things you can do, some things you're going to have a hard time doing. The things you can do, feel good that you can do them. Great, that's great. If not, let's take a hard look at what the best things that you can do on this list and thinking about finding those people that can help you do it. But these are the basics of things that at least that you should be doing for yourself at this point. Right? Got it? Okay. Let's get to our guest this week. And our guest today is Steve Sanders. He's the Executive VP, or the EVP, of Marketing and Product Development at Interactive Brokers, a good friend of the show's and in this show, in his capacity, he oversees all marketing and product development efforts at the company and introduces Interactive Brokers Low Commission, Advanced Trading Technology, and a whole breadth of products worldwide to advanced and individual and institutional investors globally. Because Steve, hey, Steve, welcome, by the way, early happy holidays.
Thank you, Andrew, and happy holidays to you.
It's been a very good year for Interactive Brokers. I mean, the thing that always amazes me is how cutting edge you guys are. I got to tell you something, seriously. How do you, because you're the EVP of product development, right? So put marketing aside for a second. So product development means new things, right? You don't have something new if you don't have product development. So how do you come up with all these ideas?
So we have a steering committee, and based on customer demand and what people who have been in the industry for many, many years, feel would be the next big thing, we put together our list of what we're going to work on for the next few months. I will say that most of this product development happens with our programmers, because we are a technology company in the broker business, and certainly a great portion of our team is made up of programmers, and they do a great job, and we just love rolling out new products to our clients.
You know what you are? You're the Tesla of the financial industry. And what I mean by that is, Tesla, is it a car or is it a technology? Is Interactive Brokers a brokerage, or is it really a technology enhancement to brokerage? You follow what I'm saying?
Right. We've always viewed ourselves as a technology company that happens to be in the broker business.
Yeah. I like that. That's exactly the same thing, right? Is Netflix, what is Netflix? Is Netflix really, well, these days they are entertainment, but a little bit further back, they were really more of a technology company under the guise of a entertainment company. And same thing with Tesla, same thing with the IB. So you're in good company.
Absolutely. And it's that mindset that really differentiates us. Some of the more traditional brokers are, brokers, and they're not really thinking technology, or the technology is an add-on to what they're doing. And, that just has never worked for us.
It's interesting, because some of this, I didn't know if I was going to go in this direction with you, but some of the technology out there is so dated. It's so, there's a few companies I can think of off the top of my head. I won't mention the names, but their technology is really dated. And they can't seem to actually, in fact, what they end up doing is buying other companies, rolling it in rather than trying to innovate. Do you see that out there?
Yeah. So, having been in this business for many years, and having spent a number of years at Citigroup, what I see for a company in the financial services business is it's always easiest just to keep the technology you have and kind of kludge on what you might need added on. But it always seems like a patch. It's only a brave company that says, you know what, we need to move to the next generation, and we need to do that by building a new platform from the ground up, which we did with our IBKR desktop. I'm sure you know the Trader Workstation well, and we have a lot of clients have been using it for years and years, and they're really comfortable with it, but it was looking 1990s. There just wasn't a way to make it simple and intuitive. And so we decided off to the side to build this new platform. It took us, 2 years before we could even show it to clients, our IBKR desktop, which is built out of new modern technology. And I believe much more intuitive than the Trader Workstation. So, it's those types of things. As I said, for a company, it's easier and cheaper just to keep what you had and add a few patches to it. And you can keep doing that for many years or till you go out of existence.
Yeah, well, true. So a lot going on around the world. And one of the things that we noticed over the last couple of years has been the real the big move. I think it's a big move into the options markets, where I think that started well, it's always been popular, but really been popularized and significant amount of benefit, I think, probably starting just post-COVID, right?
Yes.
And during that time, it was people looking to have a defined risk. Let's back up. Options. Okay, so options, I'm going to throw something out at you, and I want you to, you know, take it from there. So options, basically, when I say defined risk, what that means is that basically you would invest a certain amount of money, let's call it $500, and you know that the worst thing that's going to happen on a long contract when you're going to buy a put or buy a call is that you're going to have the opportunity to either make money or lose no more than the money that you put into it. Much different than selling a contract or even doing credit spreads or, you know, any kind of other option arbitrage. But let's just stick to the basics. You can, for the average investor out there, they're going to buy a put, they're going to buy a call, right?
Right.
So there's a defined risk. You know you're going to lose this much, and it's a leverage risk. You know that if you're going to buy one contract, it's actually 100 shares, and therefore that can leverage up. In fact, there's been a lot of times where we've had options and we buy, and a stock will move, let's say, you know, 12%, and the option can move 45%. And the same is true on the way down, right? Obviously, either way.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's where the popularity seemed to gain a lot of hold because people didn't have the money. Maybe fractional shares weren't as popular back then. Plus, they wanted to have a lot of bang for their buck. What has been take me through the evolution of what's happened over the last couple of years in the options trading market. On the basics options trading market, we could go to the more sophisticated as well. And then what's your outlook?
So, you know, let's go back to the COVID period where certain names became very popular in stocks and people were trading them frequently. And as you said, an option is a nice extension of that and it gives you more leverage. So for those who wanted more leverage, it was certainly a good vehicle for doing that. But one more thing. You know, zero dated options or weekly options were added, you know, sometime during that period. And what a zero dated option does is it's an option that expires within the week. And clients, you know, like coming in on the day of expiration and buying these puts and calls because they get an immediate answer. And certainly lots of volatility on the last day before the option expires. So certainly those zero dated options added to the interest in options because people have short attention spans and want instant gratification. And I would say the other piece of this is that interest around the world for the U.S. options market has also expanded. So it's just not U.S. clients buying this. You have clients all around the world who are buying options on the U.S. markets.
So it's interesting because when I think of zero date, I think of options. I think of near date and zero date. Zero date, I always think of that day. Right. And that's a lottery ticket a lot of times.
Right.
You know, you could buy something and all of a sudden a news item happens and that stock could plummet or go up. And that zero date where it wasn't supposed to be in the money, all of a sudden it's in the money. You have a 10-cent option that turns out to be $2. That's a good move.
Yeah. Yes. If it goes the right way, it is a good move.
But again, that's a much more binary outcome with a risk. It's definitely... you know, throwing, I mean, I would say that's kind of like a Vegas move in a way, the zero date, unless there's something that is known. For example, there's a decision, a CEO, something's going to happen that's known and the outcome can actually move the stock. And therefore it's not mispriced, but the move is exaggerated beyond what was the expectation. And therefore the option moves dramatically. So moving forward though, the outlook. Do you think this trend continues substantially as we are? And talk to me a little bit about IBKR's option volumes.
Yes. So nothing lasts forever. But when there is volatility in the markets, certainly there's a huge increase in trading in stocks and options, and that volatility could be either things moving up or down. It doesn't matter. If one believes that with the change of political party, that we will continue to see some volatility and uncertainty going into the, you know, let's say the first half of next year, then one would expect there to be an increase. But again, you know, history has told us that volatility increases, decreases, and markets move sideways. So certainly nothing is forever.
Yeah, that's true. But again, I believe that if there is liquidity out there and people looking for, I guess the word would, you know, still is the limited risk of, or divine risk. That's something. Now, what do most of your traders do straight up buys and sells, or is a lot of shorting going on, or other condors and butterflies and credit spreads and things of that, you know, debit spreads? Is that a lot what goes on?
Well, we certainly have a lot of, you know, traders trading more complex option combinations, certainly a covered call where one has stock and they say they want to sell it out at a certain price and earn a little premium while doing that is a very popular strategy with our clients. But we see both.
What about now that we are here with, once again, a significant amount of animal spirits, I guess is the right way to call it. Right. Have you seen since November, since the election, a large uptick in darts? And before I say that, before you answer that, please at the same time explain what I mean by the word darts.
Yep. Darts are daily average revenue trades. And I have been looking at this, at least at Interactive Brokers, for a lot of years. I'll be going on my 24th year come March. And the trend I have seen in all these years that I've been here is right before a presidential election, trading slows down pretty significantly, which we saw this time. And then right after the presidential election, trading really picks up, which we have also seen this time. Mm-hmm. And the same with seasonality. You know, first quarter is always very heavy in trading. Second quarter, you know, not as much. Third quarter, slow. And then fourth quarter, things pick up. So there are these underlying trends, but that doesn't mean that trading can't be hot in August, if something in the world, some kind of event is happening, which pushes the trading. But certainly there's these baseline trends that happen year after year.
And with regard to the economic, I guess it's uncertainty on a global basis. You know, obviously that as you mentioned, that could be positive for trading, negative for trading. But the big picture, do you have sentiment indices that you look at from a client standpoint? Is there something internally that can give you a, hey, you know, people are very bullish versus bearish on an internal basis?
I don't believe any of those things because, you know, my feeling is it can change on a dime.
That's true. I mean, there's all these retail trader sentiment indices and, of course, the AIIs and all that.
And they certainly tell you what went on in the past, right?
Right.
Because that's where the data comes from. But will they tell you about tomorrow, right?
Yeah. What's also interesting, they try to place them as contrary indicators when there's a real bearish, you know, mood out there that's really beneficial for the bulls because there's too many bears, and when there's too many bulls out there, it's beneficial that the potential is too much complacency and bullishness and exuberance. You know, that's what the turn is. But I got to tell you, I mean, when we look at the current administration that's coming in and the $340 billion of net worth on the current appointees that are yet to be confirmed, of course, and another 4 or 5 billion of others that are coming in. And then, and we look at the interesting thing, we look at that all of them seem to be relatively, and rightfully so, because they have all sorts of money, market friendly, or at least regulation. Is deregulation going to help the industry?
Yeah. So that is an excellent point. Certainly this administration, if one believes that they'll be more liberal about regulation, will be good, in my opinion, for the broker markets, for corporations, for business in general. And you can already see that sentiment. When the Democrats come in, and I'm not making any judgments on this, there tends to be more regulation and more constraints on doing things than under a Republican administration.
Yeah, but we can't complain about the Biden stock market.
No, we can't complain about it, but certainly, there was an increase in regulation and looking at various different mergers and other things. So,
M&A was a problem. I'll give you that. M&A, from start to finish, whether it was the Spirit Airlines JetBlue issue, whether it was, some of the recent ones, they're still looking over the Novo Nordisk and Catalent. The issues with regard to, this was a little bit different, but this is both them, but U.S. Steel, a little bit different situation there. But there's been a number of them that have just been busted. Albertsons, Kroger, they've just been busted.
Right. Exactly right. And again, I'm making no judgment on these things. There's just more constraint.
Yeah. Let's talk about, this amazing thing that has happened very recently, the growth of, I guess, what do we call them? The prediction markets, I suppose. And, yes. And what happened, that was a very interesting situation, by the way. Let's talk about what prediction markets are. And then I want to talk about was it 3 weeks before the election, the confirmation and the approval of allowing for election contracts. But let's start with prediction markets, right? I've talked about this because, we talk about Interactive Brokers on the show a lot. And the prediction markets, this is the idea that you can buy a forecast contract on something. And it's economic data or something else. Take us through how you got the idea to do that and how it's played out.
Right. So these contracts are based on event contracts, and event contracts can be any yes or no question. They're binary in nature, and the way it works is a question such as will Donald Trump win the election is put out there, and you will see two probabilities, yes. Let's say it's 55% and no, which is 45%, which means that if you believe Donald Trump was going to win, it would have cost you 55 cents. And if you didn't believe he was going to win, then it would cost you 45 cents. And at the end of expiration, in this case, it's when the presidential confirmation happens. If you were right, you get a dollar, and if you were wrong, you get nothing. So it's limited in the amount you put up, just like the options we were talking about before.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the payout is always a dollar if you win, and nothing if you lose. And you can expand this to climate change. Will the temperature of the planet be above X in any given year? Or will the CPI be above this, or unemployment be above this? Any yes or no contract could be put in there.
So now, what's the most popular?
Yeah. Well, the most popular was the presidential contracts.
Yeah, you would think that. Yeah, that makes sense.
And we got lucky there because we started out with climate change and economics, which certainly isn't quite as as popular as the presidential election. So it was good that the courts allowed us to do this. And what we were seeing 4 weeks before the election was that, you know, Donald Trump was going to win the election when most polls were saying that that wasn't the case. So for us, it was a, you know, validation of the accuracy of these markets and being able to predict the future. And I'm not saying that it's always going to happen this way. But what I will say is that I think that these type of prediction markets are another data point that's very important to society as a whole, given that the polls seem to be failing us. They never seem to be right. And, you know, I'll just bring up one other interesting point. The weekend that Iowa poll came out that said Harris was going to win,
yeah,
you could see on our markets that, you know, Trump was, I think, was way ahead at 65% before this Iowa poll came out. And then all of a sudden it went down to 60%, and then it spread out again. But anyway, I think it is another great data point in helping people understand what the future may hold.
Well, the other thing is that I see the use of this as is that it could be used as a alternative hedging positioning contract. In other words, if in fact your portfolio is set in a way that I'm going to bring something crazy up here, you're a bond portfolio manager and you have a good amount of short-term bonds and the CPI is coming out. And if it comes out hot, that may hurt your bond position. You can actually go in and have the opposite of the trade in these forecast contracts to offset some of the potential losses you would have in your bonds. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Makes sense for these markets, just like future markets. You have hedgers involved. You have speculators that just want to take a view on where the markets are going to go. And then you have arbitrage types. We actually had two contracts. Will Trump win and will Harris win, right? Mm-hmm. And they weren't exactly, the probabilities weren't exactly, you know, offsetting each other. And as an employee, I am not allowed to trade these contracts, but I was thinking to myself that if somebody wanted to come in and arb between those two contracts, they could have.
Huh. Thanks for the call. Just saying, I'm not an employee, so I'm just saying.
Right.
What about the, let's shift over, because we've talked about some of the cool things that are there that are utilized on a regular basis. I mean, still the portfolio analyst is one of the best, but also the fundamental analyst is a tool that I think needs to be looked at by anybody that uses the platform, because the fundamental analyst, there are so many tabs and so many things to look at right at your fingertips to understand what the analyst is saying. What are what's the potential for earnings? Ranges. What are, for example, all of the in graphical format too? By the way, of earnings history, revenue history, and then an ESG column, which may come or go in the future. We'll see. That's being kind of swatted, I guess, but not by you, but by the world. And, you know, there's, I don't know, 10 tabs. Is it 10 tabs of different information that's out there, from raw information to summation to ratios and all that? I mean, that's an amazing, amazing way to look at things. The colors, the information, the bird's eye view of it, really, really sharp.
So two products that you mentioned here, Portfolio Analyst and Fundamental Explorer. the portfolio analyst, I'll just mention briefly, we just added a new budgeting tool to it where you can, you know, you already have your bank set up, so it automatically downloads all your credit card transactions and your banking transactions and puts them into categories, such as restaurants, dining out, or auto and gas. And that budget can be used to be fed into your retirement planner, because you need a base there, how much you're spending now and how much you're going to spend in the future. So that is being launched next week, and we're very excited about that.
That's called the budget. That's called the budgeting tool. Underneath
a budgeting tool portfolio analyst.
But isn't by the way, let me interrupt. Isn't portfolio analyst free?
Yes, it is absolutely free.
Right.
It is a full-fledged, this is one of the last pieces I wanted to put in there, a full-fledged portfolio management system for understanding your returns and your future and with the retirement planner. So, and yes, it is free. So the Fundamentals Explorer, you know, certainly one can think of that like Morningstar's tools or anybody else's when you want to go in and you want to understand the fundamentals, you know, behind any stock or ETF. Certainly we have it for options and futures also. And the nice thing about it is, given we are a global broker, offering products on exchanges all around the world, we also support all those products around the world with the Fundamentals Explorer. So we believe it's an easier tool to use than maybe some of the others out there. It is certainly integrated into our trading apps. So you could look it up as you're trading.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're considering trading beyond the US, we certainly have great coverage there.
So, I mean, this is all designed for the individual investor who is looking for a way to understand more about their portfolio, but also more about their finances now.
That's right. Or advisors or brokers or advisor or broker clients, they certainly have an interest also in these tools and providing them to their clients. I mean, if you're an advisor and you have hundreds of clients, you can use the portfolio analyst to put together packages for your clients on their performance during the last month or the last quarter. And in fact, we just announced, because we are getting into AI like everybody else,
mm-hmm.
a new AI generation tool that will generate a synopsis for your clients.
I've done that, the commentary tool.
The commentary tool. Prior to this, you know, certainly our advisor clients could go in and they could type something into the package for their clients and it would appear on the front of the package talking about what was going on. But now, if they choose to outsource this, or at least partially outsource this summary function to our AI tool, it will be done automatically.
And just to fill this in, to give everybody a little color on this, what's really interesting. So I go into a client's portfolio, for example, and I'm like, okay, Mr. Jones, let's see what's going on. And you have things you could choose from. But one of the things it could do is it shows you attribution. It shows you, for example, okay, your position in Palantir was the largest gainer from a portfolio standpoint, added 2.2% to your portfolio for this quarter or whatever the number is. Your detractor was this. Your actual best performer overall was this, maybe a smaller position, so it didn't, the attribution for the portfolio was less. And it goes through all of this. And then the news on some of this, you could add that kind of information, the as well as other statistical information about your portfolio. So it gives you a really nice breakdown of what's going on. And then on top of that, it adds commentary. That's more, I would say, non-portfolio related, but maybe economic or market related, that can help you. It builds a story about your portfolio and the markets in totality to almost give you a full review that you would have had if you would have take the time and do it all yourself.
Right. That's correct. And certainly this tool isn't meant to replace an advisor, because in my mind,
I should hope not, by the way, I should hope not.
Right. But an advisor's function in, you know, the reason why I would hire an advisor is because I want to be able to talk to them to gain comfort, on what I'm doing. And if this will free up more time for the advisor to make more calls and talk to their clients, I think it's just a tool that's useful to them.
Yeah.
So that they can focus on the things that you know their clients are hiring them for, which to me is to, you know, talk them off a ledge when things are going bad, and you know, explain to them when things are going great, what's happening.
Yeah. I always tell my clients, you know, there's going to be good times and bad times. In the good times, you know what? That's fine. We expect there's going to be a lot of good times out there. When there's bad times, when does it get really ugly? When you're so aggravated. And there's times like that happens, right? What I want you to do is think about what you're going to do next. You're probably going to want to throw a brick right through my window. I want you to do me a favor. I don't want you to not do that. But right before you throw that brick through the window, I want you to attach a $100,000 check to it. That's probably the best time to invest.
That's exactly right. And I mean, I think that is a major function for a really good advisor, that when times are bad, to explain what the history of markets are, that they go up and down. And if you're looking at things over the long run, you are going to send in that check and invest when markets are down.
Yep. Let's talk about one thing that I'm very fascinated about is the advent and the continuing movement towards 24 or at least overnight trading. And there's some new firms out there that are doing some things, but you've been talking about this for a while. You and I have talked about this because one of the concerns I had was about liquidity. Like how much liquidity is really there and who's going to utilize this? But we have markets that are open 24/7 already. We have Bitcoin's 24/7. Right? Crypto's 24/7. Okay, put that aside. But then we have the futures market. Not 24/7, but 24/5, almost 24/5, right?
Yeah, more than five. They open on Sunday evenings.
Right, so 5.5. 24, right. 5.5. Or it's like, oh, they don't close anymore. They used to close for an hour. Remember that?
I think they still do, you know, for operational issues, but they're there pretty much.
So 23 and 5.5. Let's go with that. How's right. that? Is that a good?
Yeah, that sounds great.
So the new thing is this overnight trading, and the overnight trading difference is not necessarily futures, which you have availability to, of course, and the same thing with crypto, but it's stocks and ETFs. And I know that you had a huge increase in overnight trading on your platform since the beginning of 2024, right?
Yes.
I mean, something like, so, how much was it? It was like over some...
It's been over 500%, and it now represents like 2.29% of all U.S. trading.
Wait, 2.2, I'm sorry to interrupt. 2.29% of all U.S. trading or all U.S. overnight trading?
All U.S. trading. So if you look at the trading markets, I mean, the general markets, I mean, they're extended hours. They close generally at 8 and they open back up at 4 a.m., right? So if you look at that piece from 8 p.m. to 4 a.m., you know, it was last I looked at a 2.29% of all U.S. stock trading.
That seems like a big number. Is that a big number? It seems like a big number.
Yeah, it's pretty big. What I will tell you, these markets, just like our forecast markets, are driven by events, right?
Mm-hmm.
So back in August, there was something that happened in Japan and there was huge interest. And certainly the night of the presidential election, there was huge interest. Huge interest in our forecast contracts for the presidential race, increased interest in overnight trading, you know, for U.S. markets, increase because there are options, index options that trade around the clock. So huge interest in that the night of the election. And also huge interest in the futures markets, you know, especially the equity future contracts. So when there is some event that happens overnight, certainly a lot of interest in trading overnight. Maybe it's quieter at other times, but certainly people in other time zones like to be able to trade around the clock. And if the liquidity is pretty good, they'll continue to do so.
Mm, cool. What else on tap? Anything else exciting happening at IB? I mean, I don't know. We can't fit anything more in here. I mean, honestly, this is it's so much. It's great. It's amazing the continuation. I mean, it's not like you're sitting around going, let's see what you guys are doing and we'll figure it out. You guys are just always on the cutting edge, which is fascinating. It's just great.
Well, I have one more little present for you.
Oh,
The advisor business.
Oh, yes.
So we've been making a...
You're going to buy me?
Oh, we could consider it.
Oh.
Send me the P&L. Anyway, so you probably use the Trader Workstation to, transact for your clients. And right. It certainly has wonderful tools like allocation and model portfolios.
Right.
So we've been making a concerted effort to take that and build it into our HTML advisor portal application.
Mm-hmm.
There are some advisors that love the power of the Trader Workstation and all and everything it has to offer. And there are some that feel, well, it's a little bit complex for me and I'd rather focus on my clients, and I need an HTML application that delivers me the same tools like allocations and model portfolios in a simpler environment.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be making an announcement in the next couple of weeks.
Well, you just made an announcement.
Well, I made the announcement to you. But
We got the scoop.
Right, a press release that those tools will be integrated into the advisor portal.
Yeah, the advisor portal actually has expanded nicely over the last couple of years, which is really great. I mean, because the power is dramatic, and for individuals, you know, we run full disclosure. We run our managed growth strategy for clients on the IBKR platform, and the reason for that is it's very simple. It's just It's a beautifully and an elegant solution for the amount of trading that we do and how we do it for clients. So, you know, like you said, the rebalancing tool, it takes us to the penny of keeping accounts exactly aligned, which is, you can't do that in a lot of places, especially with the fractional shares ability. That only started a couple of years ago. And I remember when I found that finally, or when it came on online, I was like, wow, that's a game changer. Where we could buy, you know, 32.2729 shares of Apple for somebody to make up their allocation portion in their portfolio to be exactly where we want it to be in everybody else's portfolio. Really, just a great solution. So Steve, have a great holiday, a great new year. And I'm looking forward to much more exciting things from you and updates about the global brokerage business and what is going on, because I think that's a big part of what our listeners need to understand, because that's a big part of what goes on in the world of finance. So I'm looking forward to a great 2025, and I'm counting on you to bring me some new stuff.
Absolutely. The next step will continue. Happy holidays, Andrew. And first quarter should certainly, in my opinion, be volatile and interesting.
Oh, yeah.
So let's see what it brings us.
All right. All right. Best to your family. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thank you, Andrew.
That's going to wrap it up with this edition, this show, this episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Make sure to get the show notes over on the show notes page for episode number 899 at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Also, while you're there, reach out, say hello, tell me what you think about the show. Maybe you want to work with us. Maybe you wanted to say a few things. Maybe you just want to say hi. I'd like to get to know you. You can do that over on the Contact Us, About Us. There's plenty of places to see what's going on over there about our strategies and our wealth management, our investment management, all the things that we do on a regular basis for clients. And I hope that you take advantage of some of that. Thank you so much for being with us here today, this week, every week. I'll see you again real soon. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.